Hello, Sophia here. As you may know, I work for a wonderful small business called Firefly Creative Writing, where I coach writers and lead creative writing workshops. I love this work and I love Firefly. It is a business that truly operates by liberatory practices, which is very unique in the business world. Working at Firefly has also helped me learn how to build real, authentic, welcoming community and how to connect with people in ways that feel empowering and real. If you're listening to this episode and wanting to be in spaces where people are encouraged to be honest and alive in the power of connection, you may want to try out one of our workshops. We have a fresh new lineup of workshops happening this fall, starting in September, that are designed to open the door to the pleasure of writing. Whether you're a complete beginner and full of fear, or whether you have a project on the go that you want to move forward. These are cozy workshops, 6 to 8 people max, and most are online. But if you're in Toronto, we have a few in person too. I'm personally running some of these workshops, so come hang out with me or see what my amazing colleagues are up to. Seriously, everyone on this team is so skillful and open-hearted. Any workshop you choose will be amazing. And I'm so happy to be able to gift to you $50 off the workshop with the code FATJOY. You can check out all the workshops at fireflycreativewriting.com, and both the website link and offer code are in the show notes. I hope to see you in a workshop and that you enjoy this episode. Hello, lovelies. Welcome to the Fat Joy podcast, where we talk each week about how to flourish in an anti-fat world. I'm Sophia Apostle, a fat professional coach who loves talking to other fat people about what it's like to live within oppressive systems that marginalize our bodies, and how we still dare to have the audacity and courage to reach towards our collective liberation and embrace our joy. Please know this is an adult content podcast, so there will be swears. We will be talking about harms we've experienced, and we will be rebelling against weight stigma, diet culture, fat phobia, ableism, racism, etc. You can get more Fat Joy goodness, including how you can support the podcast, through my newsletter at fatjoy.substack.com. And for episode transcripts, book reviews, and show notes, head to the Fat Joy website at fatjoy.life. I am so glad you're here. Enjoy this episode. Hello, lovelies. Welcome back to the Fat Joy podcast. I have with me today a really brilliant writer who is shifting how we do rom-coms, because these are rom-coms for fat brown girls, and I am so here for it. So we have Crystal Maldonado. Welcome, Crystal.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. And thank you for the lovely intro.
I was saying before we were recording that I'm a creative writing coach. And one of the things that comes up a lot when I work with people is the whiteness of everything, you know, like, and as a fat person, I'm always like, where is my fat fantasy hero? Where is my fat sci-fi heroine? Where is my, like, where are the fat protagonists?
Literally anywhere, right? Like, we're not even picky. We will take anything.
We'll take anything. I mean, I've become very attached to, like, Ursula from The Little Mermaid, because it's like the one representation that we have.
It's like, oh, well, this is all we have, and we'll take it. So thank you.
Right. I know. Oh my gosh. We're going to so get into that, because I think this is such an important part of the work that you're doing. This idea of, and I don't know if you were, I imagine you were quite a big reader as a kid, but just that thought that as like a young adult, I could have been reading stories with characters that looked like me, felt like me, experienced life the way I did, I think would have been so transformative. And there's a part of my inner child that is so sad that that was never there. And yet you're changing it, Crystal. So I'm very excited. So tell us about yourself.
Okay. So, I mean, you already did a great intro, but so I am Crystal Maldonado. I am a young adult and soon to be middle grade author. So I'm making my debut In the springtime. So it's a summertime kind of themed book. So anyway, I'm a kid lit author and I write books about fat characters. And so far I've written stories that focus on fat girls who get to fall in love and who get someone to fall in love with them and get to experience all that joy. And which is fitting for this podcast, of course. And really, it's all about telling these like inclusive stories for me that I wished I had seen and read and been able to experience growing up. And I think that a lot of us as grown fat folks are like, what about us? Like, when will we get our turn? So that's kind of been kind of like what I've used as my inspiration for the books that I've written so far. So like I said, I have written 3 young adult books. And I have a 4th one kind of in the works. And then I also have my debut middle grade novel, with Julie Murphy. So if you're a fan of Julie Murphy, who has written Dumplin' and a million other incredible books, we have written a story about 2 fat besties who go to summer camp together. And then it gets really spooky and it seems like people might be turning into werewolves. What? I know.
All right. So, I just need you to know how I am so filled. I imagine people listening to you are so filled with like extreme excitement to the point where I want to weep because I'm so happy that this is like existing in the world.
Oh, thank
you.
It's
so meaningful. It's so meaningful.
And I feel especially grateful that I have been able to talk to teenagers and talk to us grown-ups who are still kind of teenagers inside and use these books to kind of heal that part of ourselves that wishes we got to see ourselves. And now I get to do this also for middle schoolers who I think like that age range up through high school is just so pivotal when you're figuring out who you are and do you have a place in this world and what is it and are you worthy? Like all of these questions that you're sort of grappling with, that you look to external sources like TV, movies, music, just the media, the books. And so to be able to contribute like even in a small way to that is really incredible to me.
Yeah, it is. I have to tell you, probably about a year ago, I got a message from a school librarian saying that she had been weeding and like working through the books at her school library for things like, you know, racism, anti-queerness, things like that. But until she had listened to the podcast, she'd never thought to do it for anti-fat bias, which of course absolutely made me sob reading this. And then she was like, she actually asked for and received, I think, several $1,000s to bring fat positive titles into her library. And like, and her question was, but I'm looking and I can't find a lot. I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure I sent her your stuff because I did some searching too.
Oh, and
I was
you're like, so sweet. Thank
yeah,
you.
Because it was like, oh yeah, this. And so when you talk about now bringing in middle grade, like it has to be written and maybe we should talk about this too at some point. Also, it also has to be published, and publishing is so filled with gatekeeping. It is like, so even getting the book published so that it can be brought into the library so that kids can actually see it, it's like this whole domino effect that sometimes feels really impossible for especially racialized marginalized identity authors and content.
Yes. You just said so many things that I'm like, oh my God. Okay. I want to talk about all of these things. Okay. So first of all, amazing that a librarian reached out to you and that you helped this librarian like refill her little library. That's amazing. I also just want to give a little shout out to librarians and educators who are doing this work because, oh my God, are they facing the most incredible and intense obstacles, especially now with all of the book banning that's going on. But I think there's this, you know, kids need to be able to see themselves in those classrooms and in the libraries. So it's not just about getting the book, as you said, published and in a bookstore, but also in a place where those kids are every day, right? And so they get to just feel like, oh, I'm part of this conversation and my existence matters. And so that to me is only possible with, you know, librarians and educators who are seeking these things out and purposely adding them to their classroom libraries or their school libraries, which can be tough, especially when, like you said, there aren't that many books to choose from in the first place. Now, it is interesting. And then the other piece is just that I just feel like if we aren't able to provide this for these students, there is such a question, I think, that exists, or at least for me when I was growing up, like there was this question in my heart of like, is there something kind of fundamentally wrong with me because I'm not seeing anyone else in these spaces that look like me? And no one has a body like mine. No one is, you know, Puerto Rican. No one is having glasses. You like, at the time, glasses were like not as cool as they are now. So I just remember feeling like, oh my God, I'm so weird, right? Like there must be something wrong. And I think obviously that's not true, but as a kid, you don't know that. And you're starting to develop your self-esteem and like figure out where you fit in. And so if you don't see yourself, God, that is just so lonely.
I know. It's so true. It's so true. And then I feel like, cause that definitely was my experience as a kid, as like, I was like a huge reader, would read, you know, I don't know, probably like 5 books a week. Like I was really into reading. I was super dorky. I was so adorable. I had like glasses strings and like headbands. I had the whole, I was adorable.
Oh, I bet you were just the cutest. Oh my God.
I really was. No one realized just how adorable my darkiness was, but my little nerd self, but I love her looking back on those photos so much. But like, I feel like what happened because there was no representation is, yes, absolutely, like that messaging of there must be something wrong with me, and then the way that that colluded with diet culture, which was, yes, there is something wrong with you, get skinny, and then the boys will love you, which was kind of the very heteronormative kind of environment that I grew up in. But yeah.
Yes, and then there's this other piece too, like you brought up such a good point, because not only are you questioning yourself, then there is this society that's like, hey, diet culture is super cool, and here's why you should get smaller. And you're like, okay, I guess if this is like what I'm supposed to do. But then I feel like you still see so much just casual fat phobia in media, and especially older media, but honestly, even now, like where the bodies are just considered the butt of a joke. It's okay to shame people for like how they eat or what they eat. And we're still fine with talking about like healthy foods, unhealthy foods, like all of these things that compound. So now you're like, okay, I don't see myself. The diet culture is raining down on me, and my body and existence is being made fun of. So what do you do with that? Right. Except give in, right? Like how I think we all have, and I think it's impossible not to feel that way unless there is someone like in your life, or you find a book, or you find some community or something where it tells you like, oh no, you're totally fine. You're actually great. And here's why you don't have to change your body.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. Well, that leads perfectly into your relationship to the word fat, your journey with the word fat. I'm so curious about how that evolution led to you spotlighting fatness as, you know, the opposite of what we just described as what diet culture does. So yeah, what was that evolution like for you?
You know, it was a really slow and quiet process for me. So I am a very internal person. I am kind of shy by nature. And I learned a lot of, you know, about dieting and about how having a fat body was bad from my family and the house we were living in, because they were getting those same messages about their body. So even though we were all, you know, a family of fat folks, we were all perpetually, you know, chasing thinness in whatever way we could. And fat was the ultimate insult, right? Like, no one in my family wanted to call, no one called themselves fat. No one even really referred to their bodies in any kind of way, except for these offhanded comments that were horrible. Just like, oh, I shouldn't be eating this, or, you know, I don't deserve to be in a bathing suit. Like, I had family members who just stopped wearing short sleeve clothes and would never be seen in public for those, just because they were so ashamed of their body. And I don't fault them for that, because that was the narrative. That was that was what society was telling us. And, so my, I guess, resistance came about kind of online, right? Like, so I was one of those girls who back in the day had a live journal when that was a thing.
Me too. Shout out to live journal.
Making friends on live journal. And I don't know how, but I stumbled across this community called Fashionista. And so these community, like, I don't know how to describe, they're almost like Reddit subreddits now is probably what the best equivalent would be. But it was just this community of folks who called themselves fat, which I was like, what? People calling themselves fat and they don't mean it in a negative way. And they were just showing off their cute little outfits. And they were just like, I got this dress at Torrid, or I got this top at Fashion Bug. God, remember Fashion Bug? And just different cute outfits, men, women, non-binary folks, like everyone, trans folks, like everyone kind of had a place here as long as your body was fat. And I was the ultimate lurker. I just looked. I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. But it felt like something exploded in my brain, because suddenly I was seeing people who had bodies that looked like me. I was thinking about how great they looked. And that was like confusing, because I was like, oh, I thought I wasn't supposed to think my body looked any looked good, right? And so why am I thinking these other people look good? This is so confusing. And so it was through that and talking about things like fat activism, which I didn't know was a thing or a term, that I started to sort of get comfortable with the word fat, but never enough to say it out loud, right? So I'm just like, okay, I'm a quiet little lurker. And then eventually I switched over to Tumblr. I think a lot of us did, and would be in the fat activist spaces. But again, just kind of as like, I'm just here and like, I support you, but I'm too scared to jump in and be part of this. And, I don't think get brave enough to actually call myself fat until I had my first book and I was brainstorming titles. So the original title of my first book, which is now called Fat Chance Charlie Vega. So you cannot escape the word fat. Like, it is right there. But the original title of that book was called Seconds. And it was supposed to be a play on words where Charlie's mom is really on her about changing her body and is always asking her like, oh, are you sure you want to go back for seconds on that? And then she also kind of feels like she comes in second place to her best friend, whatever. So that was the original title. And we kind of hated it. Like, I didn't love it. And then my publishing team was like, it would be really hard to market. So like, let's brainstorm something else. And I kept coming back to like, wouldn't it be so freeing to have a title that just tells you what you're getting into immediately and then makes me, like, forces me to be comfortable saying fat, calling myself fat, and being vulnerable in that way. And so I, you know, we came up with a bunch of different versions, and then Fat Chance Charlie Vega was the one that stuck, and it felt so liberating. And now, because I had this book, suddenly I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. Like, I'm just going to call myself fat. I'm going to be a fat girl. And like, I'm going to find my fat community. We're going to do this, because that word, I had given it so much power my whole life. It was this thing I wouldn't utter. Like, it was almost like a cuss word or something. Like, I would not say the word fat, unless it was aimed at myself and in a derogatory way. And so now I was getting to sort of take the stigma away from it. I was turning it into something great, something neutral even, right? Like, I would have, and something that just described my body. And I think for a lot of us, taking that word back and reclaiming it feels like a really powerful moment. Because here is this term that has been weaponized against us forever. And now it's ours, right? Like, it's mine. It's yours.
Right. Well, and I think it's so beautiful how before you could say it, you wrote it. Right. And that's like such the power of writing. We at the writing studio I work for, we talk about like these writing groups that we run, coaching, all the things we do. It's not therapy, but it can feel very therapeutic.
Yeah, that's so true. I never thought of it like that. But yeah, I've always personally felt a lot braver in my writing and explored things and feelings and really used my diaries and journals and things like that to figure out how I'm feeling. And so it makes perfect sense that I would be like, I'm just going to write it and then it's going to force me to say it. And now this is just going to become part of me.
I love that so much. And when you, did it feel like, in my mind, it feels deliciously transgressive to write a novel that centers a fat character. Did it feel like, was there like a, like, a little feeling like that for you?
Yes, I am a total like rule follower, always afraid of getting in trouble. Like that's just me. And I don't know why. And so creating this love story, which like is always just like thin, heteronormative couples kind of at the center, often blonde, just like conventionally beautiful. So like creating this story around this girl who shared so many of the same identities and traits as me and having her call herself fat, but not in a bad way, right? She's just like, my body's fat. And I think fat bodies are beautiful and I'm struggling with self-acceptance, but like I'm working on it. Then getting to watch her as she not only falls in love with someone else and they fall in love with her, but as she falls in love with her own self, felt so incredible and powerful, especially, I mean, when I was working on the manuscript. So I started writing it in 2016, kind of after the 2016 election. I was in such a bad mental headspace, as I think many of us were. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to take all of these identities that I have that I feel like are not accepted right now, that are being challenged, that I'm being told are not welcome and appreciated. And I'm going to put that in this story and just hope that maybe there might be someone someday who might read it and get to feel like, oh, I am very much worthy in all of this and in all of my greatness. And so that was my little rebellion in a way.
Yeah. Well, and that's like the power of the pen. I mean, there's a reason that saying exists, right? This is such a personal question and you don't have to answer, but I just noticed your beautiful ring and I'm like, did you write your own romance without knowing you were writing your own romance?
Okay. So thank you. Thank you for calling it a beautiful ring. Actually, yeah. So Charlie Vega's story is sort of inspired by my love story with my husband. We met in high school.
You did. I love
it. Senior year of high school. And so the main love interest for Charlie is a guy named Brian. And so there's like a little bit of an Easter egg. So Charlie, her name starts with a C and I'm Crystal. And then Brian starts with a B and my husband's name is Bill. And so I used kind of how we sort of met in high school as just the like, just the tiniest bit of like, what if this was a story, right? What if our love was so great it could inspire other people to feel romantic and feel like they deserve this greatness? And so he was like, oh yeah, you want to write a love story about me? Like, that sounds great. That sounds amazing. And then he read the story and Brian is this very like sweet and kind and like thoughtful person and was very much inspired by my husband. And he was like, wow, thank you so much. Like, you made me look so good in this story. And there's this little scene in the book that, this is not a spoiler because it's early on and Charlie and Brian are just friends, which is how my husband and I started out. We were also just buddies. And we had art class together and In the book, Brian ends up doing this thing for Valentine's Day where he brings in a Valentine for each person in the class. And it's because Charlie earlier had said, you know, Valentine's Day is so stressful. And like, what about when we were kids and everyone got a Valentine? Like, that's the kind of Valentine's Day I want to have. So Brian remembers this. He brings her a Valentine and passes them out to the class. And it's the first Valentine Charlie's ever gotten outside of elementary school. And it's based on my husband giving me my first Valentine.
Oh, Crystal, I can't handle it. I'm crying. I can't handle it. It's so beautiful.
I might have it around here, but it's this. Oh, I do. Oh my God, I do. Okay, so it's hard to see, but you can see how old their dice. And then on the back, it's just a pun that says paradise. Get it? And I assumed it. And we weren't dating at the time. We were just buddies. And I just was like, oh my God, I just got my first Valentine. And maybe like, and I felt like something shifted in me where I was like, did he mean to do this? Like, I'm not like a thin, pretty girl. Why would he do this? And it changed. It started changing how I saw myself, which I know they always say, oh, you have to love yourself before you can fall in love. But I think there's this line I put in the book that, you know, yes, of course, but also sometimes it takes the right people around you to help you fall in love with yourself. And that was very much my experience.
Oh, Bill.
I know. He's the best.
Shout out to Bill, who's making me sob. Oh my gosh. And how, like, wow, what a beautiful way, especially in your kind of like late teen years, to be so cared for and to be so seen and just, oh my God, what a gift. What a gift that is. And then that gets to, again, like be paid forward into the novels that you write, into then what people get to read. Oh,
yes, yes.
That's amazing.
Exactly. Oh, thank you. It's surreal to me still. And he has been such a supporter. And honestly, I wouldn't have been able to become an author if not for his support, right? Like, he's the person I'm like, can you read this first draft or can I work through this idea with you? Cause I don't know if it's any good. And like, I need someone to bounce these ideas off of. And he's always like, yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Oh, amazing. Oh, yay. I love that we have that story here in the podcast. It makes me so happy. I really love love. I'm mostly cynical, but I just really am actually a big softy romantic at heart. And I just love it. I love it. I'm really curious, Crystal, again, because I work with lots of writers. I know how hard this is. How did you get your publisher to publish a rom-com about a fat brown girl? Because that is, it's really, what I've heard from different writers and of different, you know, marginalized identities is that a lot of publishers right now will say things like, we've already done two books that center fatness. So like we've hit our quota for the year. It's like, okay, but you published like 30 of, so there's like these weird like gatekeepy things happening. So what was that journey like for you? I'm just so curious, like, yeah, what happened if it was really hard? And I mean, I'm so grateful it happened, but like how? It seems like it shouldn't have.
I know. And then the fact that I now have three like romance books about basically the main characters have like on paper this quote unquote same identity. Obviously, they're completely different characters. But the fact that there are three now, I'm like, I can't believe I am still allowed to do this, which is wild that we even have to worry about that when like nobody thinks anything about, oh, yeah, we published 50 YA books about like a thin white girl or a thin white man, right? Like that's not never questioned. But yeah, so it was definitely challenging, I will say. So I honestly, when I wrote Fat Chance Charlie Vega, I never thought it would get published. I just kind of wrote it and hoped. And then I found a literary agent pretty quickly after I had gotten the manuscript completed. And she's still my agent today. Her name is Tamar Rudzinski, and she is the founder of Context Literary. And she was such a champion from the get-go. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. I had a million questions, and I remember so vividly like how kind she was and how she went out of her way to, you know, she called me and was like telling me all of the things that she loved about the book and giving me so much hope in ways I hadn't expected. And immediately she was like, I can tell that this is a book that means a lot to you. And the identity of the character also comes across as something that's really important to you. And so she's like, you know, if we work together, that is one thing I promise I will keep front and center. Like, we're not going to compromise this. We are not going to make this character thinner. We're not going to have her change her arc where it's like, oh, she went on a diet and now, oh my God, the world loves her, right? Like, she was like, we're not doing any of that. We are keeping her as Charlie, and she is going to be Charlie at the beginning and the end, right? And we're not going to change anything. And so that was all I kind of needed to hear. I was like, okay, you get it, and let's do this. And so Tamar and I, we worked on some edits together, just to make the manuscript stronger. And then as she was doing, you know, we went on sub together, and she, you know, would send the book out, and I was a glutton for punishment. I was like, tell me all the rejections in addition to, which I would never do again. But at the time, I was just so excited that I was like, oh my God, Disney rejected my book. What, that means they read it. Like, and I thought that was like a win. I was like, oh my God, Disney read my book. This is so cool. So one of the comments we kept getting was like, oh, sorry, it's a good book, but we already did one that features a fat character. One. And I'd be like, man, if we had just been a couple of months sooner, we could have been. And it's funny now because, like, I don't know how many books exist out there with fat characters, but it's not a lot. And so if your quota in publishing is like, oh, we have one per year, that is abysmal, right? Like, what are we doing? And why is that even a thing we're kind of allowed to say and make public? Like, even if that was the reason, I'm still kind of shocked that they wrote that out in an email, like, now we're good. We got the one fat character for the year, so we're all set.
You're right. I never thought of it that way. That's true. Why the hell do they get to say that? Like, surely, but you know what? It's interesting because this almost feels like, to me, connected to fatness is not a protected kind of human rights category. And I'm like, oh, I think there's no ramification anywhere around that. And so it's like, yeah, we can discriminate against and only have one.
And that's what it is. It's saying like, yeah, actually, we don't see the value in this. We don't think it's important, right? We don't think that that people who have fat bodies deserve to see themselves. Like, it says so much in that tiny like sentence that's just like, oh, we're going to pass because we already have our one fat book for the year. I hope it's changing, but I definitely face that throughout the process, and it sucks.
Right. And then, so the publisher that did pick you up, are they a publisher? I actually don't. Who is the publisher
of Holiday House?
Of Holiday House. Yeah. All right. And I don't know them very well, but like, there are certain publishing houses that are starting to, I think, emerge and maybe refocus on intentionally bringing in more diversity, which is great. Is this, are they doing that? Is that what was?
They have been really good to me. And so Holiday House has a really long history of being kind of at the forefront of children's literature. And then the way that Tamar explained it to me was like, kind of took a break from publishing new works for a while. And then around the time when we were on sub, Holiday House was reestablishing itself and coming back, and they were looking for these new titles, and all, and that did focus on diversity and, right, and talking about how experiences exist beyond just the quote unquote norm. And so So I think that was part of the appeal for them. And they treated me with such care and like tenderness in this, in making sure that this story was like well received, right? And that, like, I mean, we don't talk about, like, there's also the whole marketing aspect of,
oh, I was just thinking about that. That's a whole other thing. Yeah.
And especially when the character is like tied to you. And so like Fat Chance Shelley, they, none of my books are autobiographical. However, I mean, we're writers, right? We take parts of our lives and we put them in. I just said, oh yeah, Brian's like based on my husband. So they were really good about making sure that I felt supported and that I like wouldn't have to answer questions about fatness or diets or whatever that I wasn't comfortable with. And when that happened, because it did, like when you're out there and you're talking to journalists, I had some people who wouldn't say the title Fat Chance Charlie Vega because I had the word fat.
No. What did
they be like, your book about Charlie Vega.
Come on, people.
They'd call her, you know, a plus size character, which is, it's fine, but like, it says fat right in the title and like, she calls herself fat. And so whatever. But like, I had, one interviewer who asked like very invasive questions and was like, oh, there's this scene in the book where Charlie's like looking in the mirror and she's thinking all of these bad thoughts about herself. Does that happen to you regularly? And it was horrible. And I was like, actually, it's fiction. And like, I think I'm pretty great. And
did you have to do like media training to not like punch people in the face? I feel like I would need some training around that.
But I kind of wish I had, because exactly, you just want to be like, excuse me? Like, who told you that you can just say these things? So, and I have to say, like, my publisher was always very supportive. And like, I cut that, I ended up kind of after finishing that interview with that interviewer being really uncomfortable and reaching out to the marketing team and being like, hi, I just did this interview. It was horrible. And they were like, oh my God, we're so sorry. Like, we vetted and thought this was going to be fine. And like, they pulled the interview for me. And like, I was a debut nobody. I didn't have anything. I don't even think the book had come out yet. And I was really worried that by saying that, I was like, oh no, are they going to think I'm not a team player? Or like, is this going to negatively affect the book? And they were just like, nope, we don't, we're going to pull it because you're not comfortable. And so let's just get rid of it.
Okay. That's like shocking.
Yes. I was shocked and amazed.
Wow. Okay. Shout out to Holiday Press, right?
Holiday House. Yes.
Yeah. Holiday House. Holy, that's beautiful. Yeah, that's beautiful.
They were so good. Yeah.
And also, I think a great fuck you to the interviewer. And like, how dare you?
Yes. I know. It's just, I think there is still so much judgment around talking about bodies. There's definitely this feeling of uncomfortability. People don't want to say, they don't want to offend, but they also, like, I'm never offended when an interviewer comes with like curiosity or that like an interest in learning. That is not offensive at all to me. Like, if they're like, hey, is it okay to say the word fat? Like, yeah, great. Like, let's talk about this. I love that. But it's when an interviewer comes and is like, so you're fat and miserable and you hate yourself. Is that what I'm getting?
Is that why you're writing this romance? Because your life sucks so bad? Like, yeah, that kind of thing.
Terrible. I had another one ask, like, so how come Charlie just like doesn't go on a diet and lose weight? Like, wouldn't she just be happier? And I'm just like, okay.
Deep breaths.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, breathe
yeah.
through it.
Yeah. Well, and it just shows like how, I mean, as if we need this shown again and again, but like just how pervasive the like diet culture beliefs are embedded in everyone, even in the face of a book like this, which ostensibly they would have read before interviewing you, or at least
read like the little jacket, right? Like something.
I know, right? Hi, you know, given what you said around the family that you grew up in, really steeped in diet culture, and what was it like for them to have now their daughter, their, you know, like you as a family member, like like actually using the word fat, like you said, kind of out talking about it. It's in the book. What was that like for the people in your life?
Well, so for my husband, he was super proud, right? Like we are both fat people. We found each other and like helped each other learn to like love our bodies and ourselves in that way, which is wonderful. And my family has also still never said the word fat or talked about any of it. So it's still very much that like, we're very proud of you. Like we're happy you published this book, but we're not going to like say the title. We're not really going to talk about like the contents. It's more just, we're really happy that you did this, but we're not going to address the elephant in the room.
There's like a line for them.
Yeah. And I do get it. I know it's very painful, right? Like when you grow up and you have a fat body your whole life, which is everyone in my family. And you just feel like there's no space for you anywhere. And so even just talking about it, I think is so emotional and hard. And when you've gotten used to never addressing it, I think for some people, you hit a point where you're like, I'm never gonna, right? Like, I'm just never gonna talk about it.
I really relate. I'm the only fat person in my family. And it's, except for I'm literally the carbon copy of my dad's mom. So like, I have inherited her body 100%. And it was very interesting when I was telling them I was doing this podcast because they were really uncertain about what that would mean, what that would be like. And as I have become more liberated and on my own journey, it definitely has shrunk my circle of family and friends. And there's a sadness there, but I'm also really okay with it because, like you said, I really want to focus on being in relationship with people who are curious. Like that is the quality, I think, that curious and earnestness, those are like my two favorite qualities in humans.
Yeah, I think humans are never cuter than when they're just being earnest, right? Like when someone really loves something and they're just telling you about it, I could listen all day. Like, tell me everything about your obscure little movie. I will just be here in awe. But yes, that and the curiosity. And I also just want to say, like, it is so hard to make your circles smaller. And that's a really difficult decision, I think. And I have also done it. And so I wanted to give you kudos because that's hard. And it's sad sometimes. It's bittersweet, right? Like there's this liberation, of course, but there's also like the mourning of like what could have been or what isn't anymore. And that's always tough.
Yeah, it is. And it seems, unfortunately, be part of most people's liberation journey, whether that's queerness or fatness or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, you just hit a point where you're like, for me, the older I get, and I also had a baby girl 5 years, or almost 5 years ago, and that I think was such a catalyst of change for me, is because I was like, I can do something about this with an actual little human, right? And I can make her understand that her body is beautiful the way that it is. And I can talk to her about foods in very neutral ways. And we can talk about moving your body and just because you like it, right? And not because you're trying to lose weight. And that really also changed the relationship that I had with family too, because now I'm jumping in on these conversations like, if she just wants to eat 4 cinnamon buns that for Easter, that's fine. Like, we're fine with that. That's what her belly is telling her she wants. That's what she wants. Then we're just going to leave it at that. And that can be hard too.
Right. It's so true. Well, and I love that, like, what a gift that you get to, like, change the lineage, change what gets passed down.
Oh, thank you for saying that. That's so sweet. Yeah, it, and I'm not, I am not the perfect mom by any means, but I in this one area, I'm like, we're going to just try to do better. We're going to try to make it a little bit easier, and hope that that has a lasting impact, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. I love that. I love that. I love hearing how this is being done differently with kids now. Because of course, a lot of people in my circle are doing it differently with their kids. And it's just, again, like it almost feels healing to like my inner child. Like, oh, like that gets to stop with them, hopefully. And even with the diet culture still raging outside of the home, here we get to have a safer relationship with food and with body. And yeah, that's incredible.
There is this, I think it's a TikTok, honestly. It might be a quote. I don't know. It's something I saw on the internet. That's just basically like, when, you know, raising your daughter, you kind of get to see what it would have been like if you hadn't dealt with a lot of the trauma that was given to you, right? And I'm obviously butchering it. Like, it's said in a much more beautiful and elegant way than I just did. But there is this like lovely idea that, oh, you can just love people for who they are and not want to change them. And you can just like, you can just do that for them. That is one thing you can just offer, is that love and that support. And it will have an impact and it will change things.
Oh, so good. Oh, I love it so much. Crystal, we have to talk about process. We have to geek out for at least a few minutes. What is your writing practice ritual? Like, give me the geeky stuff. Like, what is your approach to your writing?
I love this question because I am a hot mess. So my answer is always like, oh, I don't know. And we had, before we started recording, we had talked about like, you know, the little procrastinators within us. So I am a definite hybrid now of the plotter and the pantser, right? I used to be a total pantser. Like, so with Fat Chance Charlie Vega, I was like, what if I just like wrote a love story about a girl and who falls in love and that's it. And like, she has a problem, like a tough relationship with her mom. That was like it. I did not have a plot. I just kind of went on vibes and feelings and then hoped for the best. And then I got this book deal and suddenly it was like, oh my God, I have to come up with another book and I can't just go on vibes and feelings. I have like a deadline to meet, which I had never had to do for like creative writing before. So I tried to really like be quote unquote good. I tried to like plot everything out and say like, okay, chapter one, this is what's going to happen, chapter two, and realized very quickly that's also not for me.
Did it like suck the creativity out when you tried to overplan? Is that what happened?
Yes. Or I felt like, oh, I'm not sticking to this, right? Like I was always thinking about like, oh no, because in the next chapter, this is supposed to happen. So I'm someone who's very kind of emotional and I love to daydream and I get inspired by lots of like whimsy and music. Like I'm just that person. I just fall in love with everything. And so when I'm writing, I am that author who's like, oh, like what if this character was like a little mischievous right here, right? But I didn't know that going in. Or like I'll have a character say something and I'm like, oh, why did I do that? Let's explore. Let's see where this goes. And so when I had the outline, I felt like, oh, I don't get to like do that. And so it took some of the fun out of it. And so now when I wrote my third book, The Fall of Whit Rivera, it's, you know, also about a fat girl and she is type A and she's trying to make this homecoming like the best homecoming ever. And it's fall themed. And she, of course, gets paired up with her ex-boyfriend to plan homecoming. And then obviously they like fall in love with each other. It's great. So so when I was writing that, I kind of just embraced the whimsy and embraced the daydream. So I had plot points, right? I'm like, this is what's going to happen, sort of. Like this is kind of the big drama. This is what she's going to be dealing with. I knew that it was going to be a book about polycystic ovarian syndrome and that this was going to be her journey and dealing with kind of like a chronic but invisible illness. And how does that sort of play out? But chapter to chapter, I kind of gave myself room on, you know, where is it going to go? Is it always going to have a perfect, nice little bow to wrap it up? No. Like, I just let myself kind of play a little bit, and that was nice. But every time I write, I need a good playlist and a little treat, usually.
Yes, yes. I cannot write with music. The only noise I can write with is coffee shop hum. But so many brilliant writers that I admire and love do. They create playlists, and like, depending on the kind of scene they're writing, they'll listen to the music score of Star Wars to get into like the triumph mood. And I'm like, oh, I can't do that. All I can do is agonize in silence. Like, it's so not cool. I really wish.
Okay, but there is something amazing in that too. Like, I don't think I could write in just silence. I do love the coffee shop though. Like, I love the kind of ambient noises. But like, I have albums where I'll listen to it because that's just what I was listening to when I was writing a song. Like, and that, it brings it back. So when I was writing my second book, No Filter and Other Lies, I was just listening to Beyonce's Lion King album. So like the soundtrack to that, so good. And so every time I listen to that, I'm like, oh, it takes me back to writing that book, which is fun.
Movie soundtracks are good for that. Like, that's so good, especially if they don't have the words, but they have the motion and the mood.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Thank you. I love hearing how other people find their way. I really hate there's this whole rhetoric in writing around like, just ass in seat, like you just sit and you do it. And I'm like, who's that disciplined? Like, certainly not many
not
people
me.
I know. Yeah,
I know. And it's like, I get nervous when people ask me for advice because I'm like, I don't actually know anything. And I truly think it's so individual. Like, I don't know. I got inspiration for my fall book because one day I was sitting in a parking lot and it was raining and I had pumpkin spice coffee and I was like, I wish I could write a book that feels like this. And then I was like, oh, I want to try. Right. Like, so it's a mess. I am a mess. And I think like creative people kind of are, like most of us, what inspires us is just what inspires us. We don't know when the idea is going to strike. We don't know when we're going to feel like writing or painting or whatever it is. And so you just kind of have to figure out how to embrace it in the best way for you and not for anyone else.
Right. And I think that's the hard part, is that we kind of have to experiment to figure out. And I don't know if you find this, but I find like something that works for me works for a little bit and then it suddenly just stops working. I'm like, oh no, okay. Yeah. Now I've got to like,
oh no, am I broken?
Right? A new version. Okay, what could like replicate this? And yeah, it is. It's this really kind of magical, mystical thing that happens. And I think it requires so much trust in like not only ourselves but in whatever's wanting to flow from us and through us, and that it's in itself is just pretty, I think, such a miracle that we get to be channels like that.
I know, like the way you put that, it's just so beautiful. Yes, like how are little humans able to just be like, I'm gonna create something beautiful? What, how amazing. Do you find that like sometimes, like, it also varies for you project to project how you're going to work? Like, and sometimes for me, like, oh, if I'm writing, even like if I'm writing, let's say a speech for like my day job, I work in marketing, versus like a creative thing, like, oh, I can't write a speech while I'm like listening to fun music or something. You know what? Like, for some reason, it's just not working. And yeah. So yeah, weird.
I find that too. And that's also part of the challenge is like, okay, what is it that I'm sitting down to do? How do I do this? And yeah, it's very mysterious to me, but I think we can find it. We just have to be really, I feel like we have to be so open to the experiment of it all and just lean in, trust.
That's exactly it. Like, and not beat ourselves up when we try something and it doesn't work, right? because you'll read or you'll hear all of these absolutisms where it's like, you have to write 1,000 words a day. You have to write every day. You have to do the same thing every single time, whatever. And you try it, sure. But if it's not working, don't force it. Like, just move on to the next thing.
Move on. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask another personal question. Again, you don't have to answer, but I'm always fascinated by the character of our inner critic. I do a whole workshop called Getting Out of Our Own Way, which is all about like getting to know our inner critic. What is your inner critic's motto? Like, what does it say to you?
Oh, my inner critic. What is my inner critic's motto? Well, I have to say, I am a perfectionist, and I think my inner critic is always yelling at me for not doing things perfectly the first time and for not embracing. Like, so there's that piece, but then there's also the, I don't want to be bad at anything. And so sometimes it means I won't even try because I'm worried, oh, I won't be perfect the first time I ice skate, so I'm not going to try ice skating. I think that's another thing I've had to confront once I sort of became a parent is like, oh, you actually want to encourage your kid to like do stuff and be bad at it. And then I was like, oh no, that means I have to do stuff and be bad at it.
No fair.
No fair. I don't want to learn and grow anymore. I've done my learning.
Yes. Right?
That's my inner critic though, is just like, perpetually afraid of not doing enough or not being seen as good enough by other people, which has been a lifelong battle of pushing against that little critic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I think I know from working with writers that we all think our own inner critic voices, surely no one else hears it this way. And it's like, oh no, we all pretty much have the same. Yeah.
Oh, we're so predictable.
Oh, I know, right? I agree. So Crystal, I want to talk about joy. I always come at the end of the podcast to joy. What do you think joy is?
Oh, what is joy? To me, yeah, I guess to me, I feel like joy is just those moments that reaffirm kind of why we're here and like, our existence, like the those feelings that don't have to be big. They can be very teeny tiny. Like for me, joy is like, oh, it's a beautiful sunny day and it's the perfect temperature and the breeze is just like blowing your hair, right? And you just, for a second, you're just like, whoa, like I'm here and I'm alive and I'm amazing. And like, I can't believe all of these things sort of converged to get me to this moment. And I do find that the more I sort of let myself be free to explore failure, to be okay with that, to like embrace my body, all of those things contribute to these feelings of joy and let me find the joy in all of these like tiny, tiny moments. One thing I tried to do for this, like, this year, instead of making a resolution, was I made a journal spread and one of the pages is called Glimmers. And so I don't know if you, have you heard of this term? Okay. So I just learned about it at the start of the year. And so, from what I understand, a little glimmer is just that tiny moment. It's not a remarkable moment. It's just a glimmer of joy, of happiness. And so I started recording those in my journal, just moments where I feel that like, oh, okay, I feel really happy right now, or I feel really calm right now, or wow, the taste of this ice cream is really amazing. Like just those little tiny things that you otherwise wouldn't pause to think about. I'm trying to be more mindful of so that the joy kind of has a lingering effect. And I know it won't be long until I can experience it again.
Right. Yeah. I feel like you're building almost like, not that you need it, but like we kind of do, like a body of evidence when we're in non-joyful moments to remind us that, yeah, just around the corner, I could take the perfect sip of coffee and be filled with joy or feel the breeze or, and then you've got this whole, you know, probably pages filled with glimmers. I love that term, glimmers.
Feel free to steal it. I'm sure I saw it on TikTok somewhere. I don't know. But yes, exactly. Like, and for me, a lot of it has been about coming back into my body and using it and not being afraid of it, right? And feeling like, oh, I can get joy and glimmers out of the five senses. Or sometimes it's just like, oh, I don't know, my husband thought of me and he picked up like a tiny little thing, right? Like a little, I don't know, a tchotchke. And that's a glimmer, like just little things that help you sort of ground yourself. For me, that's the joy.
Oh, that's beautiful. This conversation was like 100,000 glimmers. So
thank you. I feel the same. I could talk to you all day.
I know. I'm like, let's get going. I have so many other things we could do. So maybe we'll have you back.
I would love to come back.
Oh, Crystal, you're a delight. I'm so glad your books are out in the world. And congrats on your upcoming release.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's important work. It's powerful work. It's beautiful work. It's joyful work. And yeah, our world is, I'm so aware. I want to like couch it, but I want to say and believe that our world is requesting this work. And I think it is because obviously you have readership, and I just am imagining that longing spreading and so many more people finding themselves in works that you have written and in works that other authors are doing that represent us more realistically. So thank you for that.
Thank you. And thank you for this podcast, right? Like, I think sometimes when we are fat, we are told so often that we don't deserve things. And we do. We deserve everything, and especially joy, right? Like, we deserve those glimmers. We deserve the big joy. We deserve everything. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Crystal. Before we go, I'd like to read a poem, because poetry can reach our hearts in a different way. Poems can have us feel in a different way. And that's what this podcast is all about. Expanding our hearts, deepening our empathy, and inviting in joy. So each week, you get a new poem. Crystal writes rom-coms, so of course I had to choose a romantic poem for this episode, and that's going to be a poem called My Friends Got Married Today by Yessica Salgado. I love the concept in this poem of how love is explored with and played with. Like, it's just, this is so delightful, and this is from Yessica's Instagram. My friends got married today, and suddenly the entire city is a love poem. The overwhelmed server trying to bring us our drinks, a rushed I love you. The drizzling sky, thousands of timid I love yous. The homies laughing like schoolboys, the most tender I love you I know. The tremble in the bride's twin sister's voice, an I love you from the womb. The groom and bride and the million secret I love yous, they vibrate to each other in a crowded room. Thank you for joining me today. My hope is that you're feeling a little less alone and a little more seen. So until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at fatjoy.life, on YouTube at youtube.com/@fatjoy, and on Substack at fatjoy.substack.com. And please do check out the episode notes for how you can connect with my amazing guest and for the links to the poem. All right, lovely, I am sending you off with my best wishes for an abundantly fat joy day, and we'll talk again soon.